Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here we go.
Francis?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey!
Hey. Another day, another dollar, right?
Or another day, another podcast.
Yeah, but also...
What dollars are we making today?
Do you know that over 40% of every dollar ever created was created in the last 12 months?
Really?
Yep, 40%. Do you know where that 40% went?
Where?
Well, what's been at all-time highs recently?
Politics?
No, the stock market.
Okay. The stock market. Politics has all been an all-time high at the moment.
Has it? You love politicians, don't you? Who's your favourite one?
Blair.
Matt Hancock, isn't it? You love Matt Hancock. What is it about him that you love so much?
I tell you what is, you know, 95% of photos ever taken in history were taken last year.
Why? What were they photographing?
It was just all the iPhones. Everyone's got iPhones.
Everyone's got iPhones?
Well, lots of people have cameras on
everyone.
Their phone.
Everyone in your world has iPhones. Do you know that I think it's something like eight or nine out of 10 phones on the planet are Androids, smartphones.
Are they really?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. iPhones are like a real minority in the world.
Really?
Yeah, but they're just like obviously the most expensive and like nicest.
No, they're not the most expensive and nicest, are they?
Yeah, I mean, what's you know?
Samsung's an Android.
Yeah, Samsung's. Are you a big fan of Samsung's?
You love Samsung, don't you?
Oh no, I had Samsung's when I was living in Africa. I had a Samsung because there weren't many iPhones down there, so it's difficult to find a charger, you know, at the local spot.
What's the local spot? What, the store, you mean?
No, you know, like out in the bush if I was going for a drink. You know,
what's the local spot? Like the bar?
Like a little bar in the village.
Oh, I didn't know what you were talking about. Like the spot, I thought you were saying.
So if I came to them and said, look, I want to charge my iPhone.
That would be like, get out of here. Like,
well, there are power surges. It's going to fry it.
Fry it?
Yeah, I fried my battery out there. But everyone has Samsung, so I was able to use their chargers.
Do you remember that time when you had that New Year's out there and it was raining and the power cut was out and you were by yourself and you were just like, "This is not how I want to spend my New Year's."
No, it wasn't. Was it New Year's? But the power went off and my generator got stolen when I had typhoid.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, you really weren't well. It's not a good place to be in.
I thought I was going to die. I was like hallucinating and like, it was really...
Yeah, it's not good. In the middle of the jungle, middle of the Ghanaian jungle.
In the middle of the Ebola crisis as well. So I wasn't... So actually, do you know what? Like, maybe I'm a bit like, you know, desensitized to viruses.
That's true.
Hey, welcome, Private Parters, back to another bonus episode today of Private Parts.
You covered a lot in that intro, I have to say.
What, just now?
Yeah, right now.
Yeah, well, listen, buddy, we're 4 minutes in. We're 4 minutes in. That's what happens when you join our podcast.
Hey, but I've got a present. We got sent a present. Maybe.
Oh, should we open it now?
Should I go get it?
Yeah. Go and get it.
All right. Okay. Stay there.
Okay. I won't go anywhere. I'm staying right here, buddy. Well, he's gone. What should we talk about? Talk about that we had our 200th episode last Friday. Thank you for everyone. I do want to say a big thank you to your Private Parters for tuning in. If you're here from the beginning for all 200 episodes, we've actually done more than 200 episodes because we've had bonus episodes, but we've had 200 Friday episodes, and our 200th one was on last Friday with Giovanni from Strictly, Alex Mitten from Main Chelsea, and Tom Lucy, the comedian, all good friends of ours and friends of the podcast. So I want to say a big thank you to you guys for... Hold on. I'm just saying a big thank you to everyone, quickly, Francis. And a big thank you from Francis, the whole team who create this podcast. You guys rock. And we wouldn't be doing this without you. So hopefully here's to another 200 more episodes. And to you guys, keep listening. Because it really does mean everything, you Private Parties. It really does. Okay, so Francis and I have got sent a card. It says, you could start charging people for all of these nice things you do. That's the card it says on the front. Yeah. That's what's in it? Is there money in it? Is there cash in it?
No.
Oh.
I mean, not right now, but in the future. Thank you. Tracy. So that's from Tracy.
Oh, thanks, Tracy.
She says, hey, boys. I'm sending you some things to say thank you for being a light in my world and making me smile whenever I listen to you. I know if I need to be picked up, you are one of my go-to podcasts. You complement each other perfectly and are so funny separately and together. I love the way Jamie gets set off laughing at just about anything. I love how Francis seems so blasé when he talks about things that he makes up. At least I think that he's making them up, but I'm rather confused at times. Sending Jamie some Pokemon toys I bought, I think, in 2012 in McDonald's and recently found in the closet. Thought he might like them. Francis, do you want them?
Yeah, I do want them. I would like them.
Francis, they actually are in the packaging as well, so they're probably valuable. Francis, I know you must miss seeing... your little buddy in person. So I've enclosed a cute little blonde from Chelsea for you to have as a playmate. Do you want to see?
Oh, what?
It really looks like you.
There's a little doll with blonde hair for you to
keep. It actually really looks like you.
That does look like. Can you send me a picture of that? I would love that.
Yeah.
Will you send me a video of it?
I have also sent you both hoodies from my state of Arkansas. I guessed at large, but not sure about your sizes. She guessed way off with you, wasn't you're an extra small. Not sure who will like which color, but I was kind of thinking Francis seemed like a blue guy and Jamie a maroon guy.
What's a maroon? I hate maroon. Who likes maroon?
Oh, that's mean.
Maroon's red, though.
Thought.
I like.
She's the thought that counts.
Wouldn't you just say red? Thank you.
She
that's
just sent
so
you
kind.
A gift. You were just.
Oh, sorry. No, thank you so much. Thank you.
Telling her how much she. Hate her gift.
I don't hate her. I didn't say that once. I didn't say I hated her gift. I said I liked it.
You could take the one you like. Anyway, I'll sign off now. Keep up the good work of bringing joy to adults and slumber to babies everywhere. With appreciation.
Oh, that is...
Tracy Allen Goodson. Instagram.
Thanks, Tracy.
TarGoodson1.
Listen, I'm going to tell you this, Francis, how epic this. So not only... You're going to love this, by the way. You're going to love this. Not only do we entertain people, hopefully, every single week, and we have done for a while, we also create relationships.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear something epic?
Yeah, let's see.
Let's see. Okay, let's hear
Show
it.
Show me.
Tom Lucy, friend of the podcast. Big shout out to you, Tom. We love you, buddy. He's been on the podcast a few times. And there was a person who he was on the podcast last who sent him a message and he replied... Yeah. Because he was on Private Parts, and they're now dating.
Really?
Yeah. God. They're now dating. And not only that, this person used to listen to the podcast with Tom, where we had his first on about 2 years ago, and she really loved the episode. So whenever she felt down or anything, she used to listen to it and made her happy, and now they're dating through Private Parts.
That is cool.
Yeah, wait. Isn't that epic?
So she just randomly listened to an episode and heard Tom and then messaged him.
Yeah, well, 2 years ago she listened to it. She's big. She likes podcasts. She then listened to Tom the other day and saw a picture of him because we put a picture of him. She's like, oh, he's quite hot. And then now they're dating.
Wow, that is heartwarming.
Yeah, that is freaking heartwarming. It's what we do on the podcast, people. That's what we do. Tom and...
Tom, you're welcome.
Tom, you're welcome. Tom, you're welcome.
You owe us. Invoices
hey, listen,
in the post.
Private Parters, we have a bonus episode today, but it's a really great bonus episode, and it's a longer one, because we not only do have a guest, but we always also chat about a lot of important subjects, including BLM and just racism in general, I think. And it's always good when we have on Private Parts, when we actually delve into these tough topics and get educated on them. So it's a really good one today with Dane Baptiste. He's been on the podcast before, hilarious comedian. He has a show out at the moment on BBC Three and BBC iPlayer.
Famous.
Tackles a lot of really tough subjects, really interesting subjects, really important issues, and also makes it incredibly funny at the same time. Go and check it out, BBC Three and BBC iPlayer at the moment. This was a great episode, wasn't it, Francois?
It was an excellent one.
It was an excellent one. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, here's the bonus episode of Private Parts with Dane Baptiste. Everybody, enjoy.
Enjoy.
So, Dane, whenever I have you on the podcast, I feel like you feel intimidated.
That sometimes, yeah.
Because, you know, I'm cool.
Jack.
Yeah,
cool, affable, great cadence, very probing with the questions. The windows to the soul, so piercing, man. Just taking a swim in Jamie Lang's eyes is what I'm doing right now.
Do you remember the last time you were on? We got real deep at some points. We got real deep in the podcast, didn't we?
Super deep. I think I set a standard, though. I think that moving forward, everybody got a little bit deeper who came on following that.
Does that mean you and I have to go deep in this one? Is that what we have to do?
For me, it's about consent. If you feel good about me going deep, then it's fine.
Listen, you don't even have to ask with me. With me, it's just, you just got to go straight in. And if I say at some point, you know, whoa, that's too much because we've gone too deep, then you'll know. You'll know, right? Really, yeah, and that's when you
let me know.
Pull back a bit. Yeah, right?
Exactly. That's how it works. That's exactly how it works. So. Yeah, if it gets too deep, let me know, and I'll pull out.
Do we have like a safety word? Is that what we do? Do we have something like Oklahoma? If we start to go too deep, I'll shout Oklahoma, and then
that sounds good. I'll say Dakota, and then we both do a state
because we both have real connections with Oklahoma and Dakota.
Oklahoma and Dakota, yeah.
Dude, also, listen, I got to switch it around because actually I'm intimidated by you because is it true you're the 674th most influential black person on television? Is that right?
Not one to toot my own horn, but you have the events. Yeah, currently I believe that I am now 674th in the league table of black excellence in the United Kingdom. Now,
what? Why am I not in this league table? I don't understand.
Hey, you might be. You might be. You just have to go through the whole thing, Jamie. So essentially, this is all from a mechanism I put together, which is called the NASDAQ. Now, the NASDAQ works like the NASDAQ, which is the stock index of blue chip and successful companies in the US. And the NASDAQ is the black chip index of movers and shakers who are part of black and British culture. So when I put that together, I didn't really take the time to think about where I'd be sitting on that. So currently 674th, which puts me above Tiny Temper's Barber, just below Trevor McDonald's travel agent, but doing very well. And also, like, you know, I'm probably not too far off Skepta Stylist. So we're getting there. It's all a work in progress.
Skepta Stylist. Wait, so who's number one in the list?
Currently number one is Marcus Rashford. For his youth. His youth is wealth and potential, and most of all, the fact that he's been able to balance his amazing work as a athlete and use his platform for his humanitarian work in terms of providing meals for school children. So can't argue with that. Yeah. Like, you know, I buy kids food every now and again, but they're normally my relatives and they're always normally moaning about it. So...
I think I'm similar. Things that I'm doing lots of similar things like that. All fun, doing great things. What about Idris Elba? Is Idris Elba up there?
Oh, yes. Idris Elba is way up there. You know.
Wait, here's Francis. Hey. Here's Frankie Boo.
Hey,
Frankie. Hey, Frankie.
You started without me.
Well, I thought we'd done our intro, so we didn't need you on. I thought that was the case, so don't worry about it.
All right,
dude. Well, you're on now with us.
So okay. Initiative, taking the bull by the horns, as I'm sure you're very familiar with now, staying in Texas. That's all Jamie was doing, just doing the cowboy, you know, leading the charge.
Also, France, what you missed out on is the fact that that Dane is 674th most influential black person on television.
Yeah. It's
That's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. It's down there.
I mean, that's not a lot. It's not that many.
It's not that many. It's many, but it's a work in progress. This is a work in progress. It's
moving on up there.
Is it all to play for? The NASDAQ is always in a state of flux. There's always something to do.
That's true.
Never rest on your laurels. Always more work to be done. So, you know.
I like the NAS Black. It's cool. I like it. It's a good idea.
Definitely, yeah. And we're just talking about where Idris Elba is. So I would say currently he's probably around top five, Jamie. That's based on, again, his achievements and accolades and also the very uncomfortable conversations I have with family members whenever his name is brought up. Yeah. Oh, Idris. And I'm like, oh, no one needs to see this dimension of your sexuality, auntie. So, yeah.
He is sexy, though.
He is so sexy. It's really awkward. So I did a selfie with him once. I put it in a family WhatsApp group. And the comments, I mean, they were positive, but not in a positive that we would like to hear from family members.
So Idris Elba and I, we stayed in the same hotel once in New York. And I remember seeing him at the obviously we were both English, but it's the only English people in the hotel. And I was sitting like down the sort of, what's it called? You know, where you're checking in the hotel. And that's the whole story.
Sweet. Okay, cool, man.
But you see, Jamie, that is the level of profile that Idris Elba has. Like, Francis didn't speak to him. He just knew he was staying in the same hotel. And that's enough for an anecdote. That's what people do. People will be like, there I was putting out my washing and Idris Elba walks past the fence.
You know, I didn't feel like it was that cool to like go, hey Idris, do you want to come and watch?
My God, he is so used to that.
Dane, do you know what is cool? Going up to Idris Elba and asking for a selfie. That is cool.
That is cool.
Do you think it's uncool to ask for a selfie?
It depends who it is, I think. It's just down to people. I mean, personally, I feel like people don't like the idea of selfies and idolatry and be like, I don't want to pester this person. But I feel like, you know, if you're going to meet Idris Elba, it's going to be a memorable occasion.
Yeah.
I don't know when I'll meet him again. And also, I might be like, hey, Idris. And he'd be like, have we met? And I could be like, damn right we've met. Remember this?
We spoke for hours.
Yeah. This, like, you don't remember this? What happened on the day? The song that was playing in the background, Idris? Well, fine. Guess I meant nothing to you.
Jamie's always very, really mean to the people who come and ask him for a selfie.
What do you mean I'm mean
to
them?
He snaps at them. Tells, go away!
I don't do that ever.
It's actually quite sad.
I couldn't see that.
I didn't do that.
No. Jamie's overly nice to all of them.
Yeah, I could definitely see it. Jamie could be like, just a second. Let's take the picture outside of the sauna. That'll be fine. Oh, we can do it in the sauna.
Wait, hang on. You just both were criticisms. Like, both were, one was just me just being overly nice. The other was just me being negative. The only time that I've been in a sauna with someone, and it was really embarrassing. I was in the sauna with our friend Spencer, and Gary Barlow was in the sauna with us in his speedos. And Spencer went, we were sitting in there, and it was like, everyone, you know, it's like being in a lift, everyone's just quiet, no one says anything, and obviously it's Gary Barlow. Spencer then, in about 5 minutes in, went, all right, Gary. And Gary Barlow said, all right, and 2 minutes later walked out, obviously.
Oh.
Why would you say, all right, Gary?
Yeah, but how long had he been in there? Because 2 minutes is, you know, may seem like a short time, but he might have been in there for like 10 minutes already.
Also, just Gary isn't a name that's really carried it on, has it?
It's one Imagine of naming names your baby Gary.
Yeah, I mean, it's
going baby
extinct.
Gary
as a name, it's actually going extinct. A lot of people, a lot of less people are calling their kids Gary all of a sudden. So I think the name Gary, and I think maybe Nigel, like those are names.
And Trevor,
they're going extinct.
Because imagine calling your baby Alan, Nigel, Trevor. What was the other one?
I feel like Nigel is not going well right now. Some of the more significant Nigels nowadays are not doing very well. Like I really, in the next 5 years, Nigel will go the same way as Adolf. Like, people go, I say Nigel, and they'll be like, "Are you? Have you read a history book? Are you fucking crazy? Can you want your son to find love?"
But I think there are, like, Jeffrey is probably going to be off the list as well. Jeffrey
is, why? Because of Epstein.
Yeah, I think Jeffrey's. Donald will probably be off the list.
Yeah, Donald's not going to do well for a little while.
Yeah,
Donald's going to do that. Unless you are a cartoon duck, it is not going to fly for a minute. Baron, but also, I don't imagine Baron's going to do well as a name for a long
Baron.
Time.
Baron. It's actually true.
Which names these... are going to do well, do you think?
Oh,
Dane. Who is anyone else called? Have you met another Dane before?
I've never met another Dane, but I'm aware of other Danes, like Dane Bowers from Another Level.
Then
Dane Cook, the comedian in the States.
The Danish people.
The Danish people as well. And then 80s pop star Taylor Dane, who I've yet to meet. But she was pretty cool. That was a cool Dane.
Where are you on the Dane deck?
That's a good question. That is a real good question. Do you know what? Last year, Francis, is actually a good point, because normally when I used to introduce myself within the industry, I'd go, "I'm Dane." They'd go, "Like Bowers," and I'd go, "I fucking hate you." And then last year, Dane Bowers dropped like 2 clangers that got him cancelled on social media, and I was like, "I am now the Dane of entertainment."
Wait, what were the two clangers?
Well,
what were
I
the
think
two
one
clangers?
Was some horrible misogynistic thing, and then the other one mm-hmm. was his questioning of George Floyd's innocence before Black Lives Matter, and then everyone was like, wow. Weren't you in Another Level in an R&B group and cancelled?
Wow.
And then he was like, "I've got black friends," and they were like, "Yeah, nah."
Yeah, that's what every really white guy says.
Yeah, exactly.
"I've got loads of black mates,"
which is always reassuring. In the same way that when someone's you get into an Uber and someone goes, "I've never raped anyone. Why would you?" I don't recall asking you anything.
But it's so funny. That is a difficult thing. When someone says, "I'm not racist. I've loads of black mates."
Yeah, it's the thing. Oh no, I've got a gay cousin. I can say that. Something someone else has doesn't make me feel better about their offences. If I broke your chair and then was like, "Don't worry, Jamie, I've got a sofa right here at home," you're gonna be like, "Well, how the fuck does that help me? How does that help me?"
I tell you what, it's quite from Dane Bowers or from Eddie, that's quite punchy to comment on the George Floyd.
I mean,
thing.
All the things to comment on, like people haven't heard from Dane Bowers in so long, and that's the thing that he goes for. And I just feel like Dane Bowers, we've not heard from you for a long time. If you're going to come back into the fore, I would lead with music rather than social commentary. Because even when you were famous, you weren't known for your social commentary. So, yeah, imagine you're like, "I'm going to peep my head up above the parapet only to go down."
Yeah, I need to say that.
Well, also, you're walking into a gunfight, right?
Literally walking into a gunfight armed with nothing else other than the platitudes from your Facebook friends. And it's like, you would have been better. Like, Dane Bowers could have been eating kangaroo testicles in a jungle and would have been so much better off.
I have to admit, I don't know who Dane Bowers even is.
And there you go. You don't, that's on how we're
do you know Dane Bowers? Dane Bowers is great. He's not great. He's obviously
Dane
not
Bowers, right, Jamie. Dane
that's a bit nice one. Nice one. Yeah. Things aren't going well.
I don't like his music, but I do like his recent political commentary.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't care for his music, but the message. Yeah. Dane Bowers was the lead singer of the group Another Level. Group. And then he...
I don't know what Another Level either.
Yeah, so he had a solo career. He had a solo career with a song with Victoria Beckham when she went solo called Out of Mind. And
Where was I when all this was happening?
I'm probably getting educated or something. I don't know. I'm just probably getting educated or some shit.
When was this?
He also famously went out with Katie Price.
Oh. Yeah, he did.
This is when she was still known as Jordan. And then they had a sex tape that leaked. So it's just been win after win after win.
Just killed it.
Just been knocking them out the park.
How do you know so much about Dane Bowers?
Is it because you have the same name?
Yeah, I had to learn. I had to be like, is this what it takes to be a successful Dane in entertainment? Is this what it means to be a Dane in entertainment? There's so many cool Jamies and Francis all over the place. And I look up the closest Dane to me. Anyway, I'm the Dane now.
Do you know what? because the whole Black Lives movement was incredible and powerful in so many ways. But there were lots of, you know, there were a lot of people, especially sort of white influencers who thought, I'm going to get a part of this. And they would then turn up in the crowd make fools of themselves because they didn't even know why they were there.
Yeah, basically showing up or doing the black square. And then, yeah, a lot of weird performative activism where they'd just, you know, put up a fist with a mask on and be like, that's my job done. Well, changed. Back home.
What's your view on that, Dan? Do you have a view on it? Because it was a big thing, right?
I mean, so far as the input from influencers, I guess it's really down to who they're influencing. I think raising awareness to people that were previously unenlightened is important, and sometimes that can come from the most non-conventional places, or unconventional places. Sorry, but I think I do get quite cynical when, you know, you look at the background of other people and I'm like, well, there's no point in like saying you have solidarity with this and then showing discrimination to people in every other walk of your life. Doesn't really kind of make sense. Or if you're continuing to feed into a system that perpetuates this, doesn't really make any sense. Like, you know, for me, it's as simple as people who like were maybe like, well, I think there's an issue with black on black crime. Yeah, but you sniff coke. So who do you think they're fighting over? It's really a chicken before egg kind of situation. But I mean, for the main thing for me is, you know, there's always going to be naysayers or detractors, and people always will tend, especially the times we're in now, people always tend to attach themselves to an ideology because I guess people are always trying to find meaning, especially on social media, where it's very easy to be lost in a sea of what is true democracy. People want something to rally behind so they can kind of stand out. So it's just, I think it's just kind of a normal phenomenon that, like, if there is an issue, and a lot of time oppression or struggle is normally how we define our humanity by, so normally people want to get involved in that, be like, I was part of that as well. It's very to say, it's the same as, like, you know, when people say, I don't know how well we're going to do this year, I'm like, I didn't see you playing for any football team. What do you mean we? Like, team wins, you don't get a share of the money that they win the Premier League with. So, you know,
but well, I think also, like, people, humans are social creatures, right?
Exactly.
We're designed to be put in a tribe, right? And when you know, if you remember at the beginning of the last year, we were all kind of locked down, separated from all of our friends, and felt very isolated.
Yeah.
So you know, I think there was this big movement that everyone felt like they were like, oh, we can join in on this, and I think people were also looking for a way to vent their anger as well at the system that was imprisoning them, right?
Yeah, exactly, and it's exactly that, and I think it's all part of it. And I think in this instance, this incarnation of the Black Lives Matter movement kind of was really probably is the one that was a lot more reminiscent of previous struggle for civil rights, in that as it continued, then, you know, it became a part of a larger conversation about inequality and discrimination. Mm. And as you said, Francis, I think it definitely brought to the fore a lot of disenfranchisement that a lot of people have. And I feel that, you know, if you can have a conversation about inequality at a very binary, in terms of very binary terms of the haves and have nots, then it allows for everyone in between to be able to vocalize their stuff as well. So obviously I have complete solidarity with BLM as a movement, but it's also allowed me to be a lot more aware of some of the subgenres of issues of oppression that I may not have been as aware of. So for example, the fact that people have to emphasize that black trans lives matters deals with the fact that even within the black community, we may have to address issues of transphobia amongst people, because if you are a black trans person, you are dealing with two forms of discrimination. Doesn't mean because you are dealing with those two that one of them that I identify with is any less. So I think it's pretty good in that respect. And for me, the main thing is that I feel okay about it. I mean, people will do their part as much as they can. And I think even if it does seem to be performative or even paltry to some, it's still better than people doing nothing. So.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dane, have you ever felt any discrimination ever in your life, in your career, in anything at all?
I mean, yeah. I mean, loads in so many different ways, and it kind of varies. I guess, obviously, race would be one of the overarching points of discrimination I've dealt with from my whole life, and to the point where, you know, it's almost dealing with racism as a black person is, it kind of almost becomes atmospheric in that you... It's like I breathe in oxygen and racism because it's that woven society. Yeah, I mean, it's something you always have to factor in. And it can be at very extremes. I believe, like, for most people's experience, most black or brown people's experience of racism, it's like losing your virginity. It's like you don't forget your first time. And I think depending on how that experience is, that will determine how you proceed as an adult. Some people, most frequently what you'll get is two schools of people that I suppose choose to ignore it. And maybe rise above it or try to thrive in spite of what they might perceive to be racial rhetoric or discrimination. And then, you know, some people, I guess, like myself, whereby when I looked at that as a structure, it was like, well, this structure has no real factual or scientific basis. So it was more of a point to demonstrate by example how it can be dismantled and also just to choose to exist and thrive in opposition to stereotypes about you. So, yeah, I've dealt with it quite a lot, man. That's probably been the main one. And
fuck, yeah. it's insane because my, you know, I you know, I haven't felt or experienced discrimination, but then I was talking about this with my girlfriend and her sister, and their, you know, their dad's from the Middle East, and so, you know, they're Middle Eastern, and my sister's girlfriend said she had it when she was first, she first went to university. They went to a club, and they were going into the club, and they were being checked, and the guy in front of her turned to my girlfriend's sister and said, you better check her, she'd probably have a bomb in her.
Yeah,
and she was so upset. She had to go home. She couldn't go out for 2 weeks. It really hit her. And she said, "You don't understand the impact it has on an individual when someone is
I don't think most people
racist
do.
Or whatever towards them. It really, really hits them."
Oh, definitely. And the thing is, it's interesting to say when you say you haven't experienced discrimination. I think that's been a big part of the shift in the narrative is that when people discuss white privilege. It's not always about like these advantageous parts of like you get better jobs or more pay. It's almost the privilege of oblivion in that, you know, Jamie, as irrespective of your race, is like, you know, I don't go out and aggress anybody or pick a fight. I'm not a bad person and I don't invite any negative energy. And so by that merit, then I don't want to cause any harm or be subject to any kind of harm. And it's well how most human beings will try to live their lives. But, you know, This is the real complex, and I guess the real plight is that if I have the same horizons as you, I want to be a nice person, I want to interact with people, I want to be a friendly person. But irrespective of that, some people will already make a judgment of who I am, and therefore then choose which place in society I remain in just because of how I appear. So even in that story, where you're like, oh, it's terrible because my girlfriend's sister couldn't get into a bomb, I was thinking, well, at least she got in, because I remember going to university and they just take a look at you and go, you're not even coming in tonight. And I was
serious.
I grew up in London, but when I moved to the north, I was just in West Yorkshire. So I wasn't even like in Scotland. I'm in West Yorkshire where my family live. And you are getting turned away from nightclubs like it's Jim Crow. Like I remember being in a nightclub in Leeds. They'd have like a dance room, like an R&B and hip hop room and what's called a cheese room. Because I found out that cheese is not only an amazing delicacy for white people, it's also a genre of music. And...
Would Dane Bowers be under cheese?
Yeah.
I mean, he's the cheese king. I wasn't even aware that cheese was a genre of music that could be enjoyed for a whole night. And people go into rooms and they listen to like theme songs from TV shows that they like and they dance
to.
I didn't know people did this in like, I mean, I know people did it.
Sure, but you didn't want to go to that nightclub anyway.
in your living room, I knew you would do that. I like in your living room, you might dance to the theme of Friends. I didn't know you'd pay to do that in a nightclub with your friends.
The theme of Friends.
That's what people used to be. This is my song. So now what? And it's like the love life to your way.
What people actually go, they say, I'm going to go to a nightclub.
Cheese room. And find, yeah, and I'll go to the cheese room. Yeah. And it's like people doing this, they're like the countdown. Ah, love my life. I'm like, what the fuck is happening here? I'm like, what is going on here?
And you got turned away.
And I said, so there's the cheese room. So they're separated. And I was, and there's the cheese room. And I think I was looking for my friends. And the bouncer was literally like, we're not having guys like you coming here to mess with these girls. So, and that's, this is in the 21st century. And I can tell you, any black male living anywhere past Birmingham can tell you about this experience. I wasn't even aware that it was that bad until I got there. And I was like, this is insane. This is like real Jim Crow. Like, and there's stories of those things all the time. And
what was your response? Do you have a response or do you just walk off?
What
do
you, I mean, what you know, you might, your response will be like, you know, what the fuck is that based on? Literally, I remember being in a nightclub in Bradford, a guy saying, I can't come in because I'm wearing trainers. And a white guy literally walking past wearing trainers. And I'd be like, what about that? He was like, yeah, but those are like running shoes. And these are like rubber shoes. And I'd be like, come on, buddy. Just if you don't, I would actually rather you be honest. So save myself some time rather than come up with these stupid reasons. But normally, but it'll always be stuff like, oh, there's an R&B club down the road that I think you'll enjoy a lot more. And this is an example of this is all with, so you may have heard of District Nightclub in Piccadilly.
Yeah.
This will happen. There was a big scandal about District Nightclub not allowing in black women of a particular
being boycotted.
And then ironically, eventually shutting down due to a fight that took place between Albanian organized crime members. So, but yeah, it's a common thing. So, I mean, I've dealt with that discrimination all the time. I've dealt with a lot of discrimination in comedy as well, because I mean, comedy, like as an industry, will reflect society, especially because it's such a person intensive kind of industry.
But in comedy, I would say, like, you know, some of the legends that I know that I grew up with in comedy, you know, Chris Rock, and you know, and all these guys, it feels like they were the sort of, you know, Eddie Murphy was
one of the biggest,
freaking insane. Absolutely. Right?
And so still, like, still one of the biggest. Kevin Hart is one of the biggest. But
Kevin Hart.
It's such a good point you bring up, Jamie, because this has been a big part of my plight and this is probably one of the big points of industrial racism within entertainment is that one of the very good ways of dealing with racism through discourse has been comedy. So normally when you find, you know, people who are descended from immigrants or non-white people living in the UK, amongst themselves, we tend to kind of make jokes about stereotypes that are basically projected onto us or stereotypes that were aware of us. And then we kind of challenge those with each other. And this is how you kind of rapport build. And it's almost in a way you're kind of celebrating it. And so far as comedy, like, we all know that America's social fabric, you know, America's known for being very overtly racist. But what they've had is that America's always been comfortable with a black presence in their homes. This is part of their legacy of slavery, is that even though it's an overtly racist country, having a black person in their home by method of working in their home as a domestic or actually being on TV, it means if you were someone who wanted to know about the black journey in America, you can see it. Whereas in the UK, particularly over the last 20 years, this is a presence that kind of disappeared from TV and is only now beginning to reappear, largely due to a lot of success of black creatives on social media or online. Mm-hmm. So, but what it means is that, like, in America, because we had Chris Rock and stuff, but even going as far back as like Dick Gregory was like the first African American on TV. They've had like Flip Wilson, Red Fox, Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle. So they've had a long legacy whereby if you are someone, unless you are rigidly refusing to acknowledge black people, you can watch it and be like, okay, so I have an idea of what it's like. So I have a mouthpiece. In the same way that, like, people will have their misgivings or preconceptions about, you know, the trans community or the LGBT community, but now they be able to see so many other different devices whereby they get a bit more of an insight into that lifestyle and into that community. The problem with the UK is that this has not happened in this country, whereby most people, if you ask them to reference their most known black British comedian, they'll say Lenny Henry. Now, Lenny Henry has been the prominent comedian as long as I've been alive, as long as we've all been alive. And that means that there's not been any kind of evolution. Plus the fact that Lenny initially was an impressionist means that his jokes were being written by Oxbridge writers who themselves would have had no real connection to the black community. So what tends to happen with a lot of black comics when they begin to prosper on mainstream TV is that because black audiences for so long haven't seen someone that represents them, they're kind of like, well, that's not really for us. And so there's a massive disconnect where black comics that enjoy mainstream success find it very hard to connect with black audiences, and black comics that have built their audience amongst black people find it hard to kind of transcend onto the mainstream, because it's been this goal for so long whereby there are a lot of people in the UK who, not because they're racist or discriminatory, but just by the merit of geographics, do not see a lot of black and brown people very often. If you live in if you live in County Durham or in Darlington, you just don't see a lot of black people. They just don't live there.
Yeah.
This is not a bad thing. This is just a function of demographics. There's the majority of people in this country are white. So but what you can do is that if you watch TV, you'll be able to get a direct narrative about the life of being a black person in the UK. But within the UK, all you see that happen normally is with sports and entertainment. Now, if you're watching an athlete, you only get a really of a soundbite. They don't really talk about who they are. It's about what they're doing. In the same way with music, it's very much linked to youth culture. So again, you're getting only one dimension. Comedy is very different because normally when we're being like weird with each other or when people are trying to get to know each other, any kind of public speaking, normally you use comedy to kind of ease the tension. So because Britain has been deprived of that for so long, that's why there's such a schism whereby it's like, we don't know. And if we only, and if you are a white person living in somewhere like County Durham, and the only time you see black people on TV and they're either running or jumping or kicking a ball, or they're rapping and they're like in their 20s and you're in your 30s and you're our age, and the only time you see black people on TV is if they are on TV discussing racism and nothing else, and they're obviously pissed off, you are already building a image in your head where you're like, well, I can't talk to any black person because they're always going to be pissed off and think I'm racist. So how that manifests to me is that, like, if I perform comedy and I perform to a white audience, they might want to come and say, oh, that's a great show. But they think, oh, if I speak to him, I can only speak to him about black stuff. So how do I begin this conversation? So they'll be like, oh, hi. I work with a guy called Winston. He's from Jamaica. And he works on a building site with me. He's a nice guy. And we're friends. And we have our coffee together. And I'm like, you can just talk to me about the weather like anybody else. Or you've had so many people that's been deprived of having the tools. Because if you never heard Spanish as a language your whole life, and then one day someone came and started speaking Spanish, you'd be like, huh? What the fuck are you talking about? And it's almost the same thing whereby it's like, if you've not seen a particular aesthetic for so long on TV, or you see it in media, and you only see it in one incarnation, then they're going to see me and be like, oh, Dane, how do you feel about knife crime? I don't know. I don't live near any knife crime. But they've been taught that this is what they link it to. So that's the real
problem. Trying to relate to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Dane, listen, because that also, you know, that leads us on to your show, right? Because this is like a big thing, right? Not only for yourself, but I just think it's insane that you've written and created this show. It's called Bamus, right? Isn't that right?
Bamus.
Sorry, pronounce her on Bamus. But it's insane, and it's been received incredibly well. So on BBC iPlayer and BBC Three. But isn't that epic that you've got something? Firstly, to get something like commissioned and during this time, and it's aware and being created and being received as it is. You just over the moon.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I'm very happy with the reception so far. But yeah, all the stuff we're discussing before is the reason why I created Bamus. So for those who don't know, Bamus is a show I kind of came up with, and I've been developing it over the last 3 years or so. And it's just basically a word that means black and famous. And it comes from, like I said, that angst that you get as a black creative, whereby it's like, do I have to dilute who I am in order for me to prosper to a predominantly white audience in the UK? And at the same time, it's kind of like, there's been a lot of my predecessors have had success in the UK, and they probably have a place resonating in the hearts of many white Britons, but they don't have any reference point either. So again, it was really about me trying to create a format which bridges that gap, whereby, you know, I'm aware that before me, you would have had a Richard Blackwood or a Stephen K. Amos, or, you know, even with BBC's alumni alone, where you've had like your Chris Akabusis and, you know, Reggie Yates. And, you know, you just had even Floella Benjamin going back as far back as that, or Rusty Lee, like whoever, like even these people have gone before me themselves have had success because they've been able to resonate with a British audience. So I guess the idea of the show is to remind people that, you know, this schism is not as pronounced as mainstream media and news would lead you to believe. You've had black people and brown people around you your whole lives, and it was never that big of a deal. And so the idea of the show is just to recreate that anthology and remind people of that. Like, you know, whether you are Generation X, whether you're a millennial, even if you're a boomer, at some, like, I'm black. I don't listen to Shirley Bassey. It's normally old white people that do. But she's of so by that token, you know, she's validated as being a success as a black person in the UK. So to me, Shirley Bassey is famous. And I wanted to create something where it's like, we should recognize her achievements, how she's contributed to black and British culture in the same way that Idris Elba has today, or you know, younger rappers like are doing tomorrow. So for me, it's like, it's really about linking those icons and their fans, and essentially creating a complete whole state whereby it's like, you know, we should be where Americans are. I'm not saying that it will solve all the problems immediately, but this point where we don't discuss race relations or racial tensions in the UK, there's no need for us to do that, because we're seeing all the time that not only are a lot of our creatives proving their talent over here, they're going to the US and enjoying massive success. You know, I feel like someone like Daniel Kaluuya, for example, Daniel Kaluuya, when he was in the UK, could barely get like a Radio 4 show off the ground, goes to the States, and in the space of like less than 2 years becomes an Oscar nominee. And so for me, it's
what?
What is that down to though?
What's that down to? You just think it's...
Well, London Hughes was trying to get a show over here for like, what, like 10 years or something 10 years, like that? And she goes over to the States and gets something in like...
It's a Netflix special, and she's with David Spade and Kevin Hart. Or, you know, you look at someone like David Oyelowo, like, again, would have had a few bit parts in British formats here and there. You go to the States and they like they want you to play Martin Luther King. Like that is, you know, or like Idris Elba, you know, your acting, I guess, is not that valued in this country. You go to the States, you appear in The Wire, arguably one of the best TV series, Celluloid, and then you go on to become a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like this kind of, these people could, so it proves that it's not a meritocratic issue. People are obviously very talented and they've been able to, you know, remunerate their talent around the world. It's just, we've had a very long time where I think there's just been a wedge driven between, and it's been like about 20 years, if I'm honest, where if it's been 20 years before you've seen a balanced amount of black people on TV, that's a whole generation who will be like, well, I have no idea of how to interact. And members of industry who themselves, like anybody else, I don't know how to interact with a black person, and therefore I wouldn't know how to promote them or develop that talent. So it doesn't tend to go anywhere. So BAMUS, I wanted it to create that format. So it's like, this helps everyone. This helps people that no longer, who don't know how to broach conversations about race, people who definitely have black icons they look up to, but maybe are scared to say it nowadays. And also it's to show like, you know, black audiences that we are not separate from black British culture. We're on the BBC because it's a fee paying institution. If you are paying towards this, you should have representation. So comedy's always, for me, comedy, what I'm trying to say is comedy's always been a very good form of honest politics. Learning about
and breaking that tension, you know, because obviously something like the discussion that we've been having over the past year or so, you know, it's built up a lot of tension and charged the issue. So a lot of people, I felt it going to like a party after the lockdown when it was, you know, obviously everything was going on, and it was like this thing that no one was kind of like talking about, but it was like this charged issue in the air, right?
And and that's the thing, like and it's become so palpable now. It's like, I suppose BAMUS, I want it to be almost like a lightning rod to just harness all of this energy, all of this tense energy, and have that conversation. And it may be uncomfortable at first, but I think it's a conversation that needs to be had. And as I said, Jamie, I think it has to happen in these binary states, because originally BAMUS as well was also supposed to be like a parody of this new acronym, which means BAME, which stands for Black Asian Minority Ethnic. Now the thing is, it's a very reductive term to be like, people are a minority ethnic. Like, what does that even mean? Because if
what does that even mean?
Exactly. If your partner is like, you know, of dual heritage and maybe has Anglo and Arabic ancestry, being called a minority is not particularly accurate way of describing that person. Or by the same token, you know, if someone may be brought that way, or maybe is growing up in India, that might be like, even Asian. Like, Asia is.
Well, that's the thing. You wouldn't, for example, I have black and Indian ancestry, right? And I wouldn't describe myself as a minority, right?
Precisely, yeah. So,
well, people wouldn't automatically think that I was a minority.
But it's an interesting point, is that it's when we use these very rigid terms to describe people, like, people would be surprised who shares like dual or mixed ancestry more than you even think. Like, for example, Ryan Giggs has black ancestry. Maybe a lot of people that. Tom Jones.
Ryan Giggs' dad is black, right?
Exactly, Ryan Giggs' dad is black. Vic Hope on here the other day as well. So Vic is of dual heritage. And like, you know, you look at someone like Vic Hope, who was on your podcast before.
Yeah, I love Vic.
Like half Nigerian, half English.
Yeah.
He used to live in Newcastle. So it's like, there's too rich a tapestry there to reduce it to like four letters. So,
and same with Maya. Maya's like Swedish.
And Somalian, Maya Jama's Somalian. So it's like, as the world is becoming a lot more diverse, it's not so much about coming up with new words to describe everybody. It's more because that's the thing, is we are nowadays as well, we are contextualizing our existence within social media. And so people tend to be like, I'm this, I'm this, I'm this. Almost till we kind of present ourselves in a way where it's like, this is how you'll be able to read me with an algorithm. My name is Dane
my pronouns are he and him, and I'm a black male, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And what we're supposed, and really, like, you do that in comedy at first, but really, we should be discussing our commonality rather than our differences.
Because we're all one, really. You know, we're one people. We're humanity.
Well, yeah, and Baymus is kind of, and on a larger scale, Baymus is kind of approaching that conversation that, like, these people have been significant parts of Britain. Like, you know, people love Chris Akabusi's laugh. Everybody used to love Shadow and Gladiators. You know, people love Floella Benjamin, Martha Stewart, who has recognizable voices in news broadcasting, as is Trevor McDonald. And, you know, people identify with all of these iconoclasts all the time. And you have done before. There was all this big talk about what makes someone black and how racist is the UK. So I just want to kind of create a whole new format where we're like, it's almost, so some people will be like, this is Black Britain 101, and introducing people to a culture that they've probably been obscured from for a very long time, but not doing it in a way where I'm like, I'm Dane, you're dumb and racist, here's why. It's just more of a question of like, you know, we've been here for ages, guys, and this is kind of how it works, and this is what this is. So I'm almost kind of being, for lack of a better expression, it's, approaching it like almost like a documentarian and more like a David Attenborough thing where it's like, look at the richness of our culture.
Yeah. Amazing. And you've done that in abundance, buddy, in 3 years' work, and then getting it away and being received that way. You should just be so proud and over the moon, right?
Oh, no, yeah, I'm very happy, man. But, like, as I said, it's because I recognize the political aspect of it. I definitely want Baymus and for people to understand that I operate in Baymus as a civil servant to the people. Like, so the NASBLAC, as for example, and I'm like, you know, Marcus Rashford is at number one, Idris Elba is at number two. If you don't agree with that, I really want to welcome the feedback from audiences and to stimulate the conversation. Because by doing that, people will be like, well, I think I like Kano, I like Skepta, and he should be in there as well. And the way I want it to work is that the more that people want to reference icons they believe should be on the NASBLAC, the more these names are continuing to appear in a narrative about British culture. So the more people are like, this is bullshit. Vic Hope should be up here. Dane, you should be 774th. If you say that to me, though, I will block you. You'll be so blocked. All right? I'm doing my best, everyone. Bye.
Wait, so you compiled the NASBLAC?
Yeah, I mean, I initially compiled the initial one, but I think I want to make it a... the function of the NASBLAC is going to be like an algorithm which takes into account, like, you know, how many hits someone gets when you search their name in search engines versus you put out likes they accumulate, views they accumulate on the internet, and then mix that with, like, you know, their goodwill, philanthropic work, and... and then, yeah, and then after all that, it comes down to the people. It's a people's poll. And like I said, I want to create a genuine and honest political conversation about identity. So I want that to kind of be ongoing.
So speaking of identity, what do you think?
Epic, dude.
What do you so what qualifies one to get on the NASBLAC? If I have black ancestry, could I get on the NASBLAC?
Are you trying to get on it, Francis? Francis is trying to get on it.
Francis, it's funny you say that. We do have a specialist that do oversee the curation and the addition to the NASBLAC. So if you do have some ancestry...
I'm 1% Bantu. 1% Bantu.
Hey, that's a start. That's a start. Listen, remember when Adele did her hair? She had Bantu knots. That would have made her 1% as well. So, you know...
Francis is going to get on the NASBLAC.
It could happen. Because I guess the other idea is that, you know, in many ways, race is a construct. And so, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean because somebody has a particular complexion that they directly serve a particular culture. And it doesn't mean because somebody's white that they aren't, you know, what we now recognize as an ally. So if you're an ally of a certain level of significance, Francis, Jamie, there's no reason why you might not appear on the NASBLAC. No reason.
I would just find it hilarious if Francis got onto the NASBLAC and he was higher than you, Dave.
Oh, you know what, Jamie? Probably will happen. So in my luck, it will happen. They'll be like, oh, Francis, he's got banned from ancestry. He's in Texas. You know who comes from Texas? Beyonce. 312. I'm like, this is bullshit. This is bullshit. I can see that shit happening.
Mate, Dane, listen, honestly, guys, go and check it out. It's on iPlayer on BBC Three. It's a great watch. And Dane, honestly, buddy, congrats to you, dude, because
huge congrats.
You know, it's a really funny take, but it also highlights and doesn't shy away from these serious ideas and issues and things like that, which is just insane. And that's everything that you want.
I think it's also important to break the tension and to remind everyone that we are all, you know, we're all here together and we're all one.
And that really is the point, man. I think it's always been, for those men that believe it, it's been, you know, in some ways, Britain's real commonwealth amongst its people, at least, has always served, you know, as our cosmetic, you know, and given us a good status as our cosmetic. Like, even for example, I always say, you know, you can look at British music, for example, compared to the rest of Europe. Like, we have a healthy black influence on our music. That's why it's so good. It's why it's reported around the world. That's why 10% of all world music streaming right now is from British artists. Without that black influence, that music would be Eurovision. And no one gives a fuck about Eurovision on Spotify.
Is there actually Eurovision on Spotify?
I'm sure there probably is. But exactly, the fact that you don't know, Francis, means your mind is going to say that we should try and find this music.
Hey, Dane, listen, buddy. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Honestly, yeah, you're just educating, you know, us all on all of this stuff. So I really appreciate it. And good luck with the show. Honestly, everyone, go and check it out. It's freaking amazing. Buddy, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Everybody, we're going to see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.